It's the middle of the week, and we've got another Farmer Forum set and ready to roll. But before we do that, U.S.-China trade relations take center stage here on AgriTalk. We've got a conversation with the country's top trade negotiator coming your way. And welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad that you could join us today. Thank you so much. Like I said, we've got a Farmer Forum coming your way. We've got Wayne Fredrickson from Iowa. Lori Isley from Michigan will be joining us for the second half of today's show. Should be an interesting conversation with those guys. Going to be talking about conservation. And you know what? Let's bring in Betsy Gibbon. Betsy is the national reporter for Ag Day. How you doing this morning, Bets?
I'm doing all right, Chip. How are you?
Doing just fine, just fine. It's National Pollinator Week.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I'm learning something new from you. I'm glad you told me.
It is National Pollinator Week, and Wayne Fredrickson from Iowa, up in Osage, I think is where Wayne is from. He's a member of the ASA Board of Directors. He's a past president of ASA, Betsy.
Okay.
I know that. But he is very, very much into the pollinator plots. Even if all you're doing is creating a little 20 by 20 or a 10 by 20 or a 5 by 10 plot of environment for the pollinators, Wayne is all about it. So we're going to talk with him about some of that today. Should be really interesting. And Lori Isley is an award-winning conservationist up in Michigan that we're going to be talking with as well. Hey, let's do a real quick check of the weather, should we? Because right now there are some showers popping up in southeast South Dakota, southeast Minnesota, central Kansas, but these are fairly isolated events. The rest of the Midwest is really looking pretty clear so far this morning, Betsy.
Right. Most of that precipitation right now was continuing through the southeast. And like you said, some rain is expected to arrive in a couple of the pockets of the nation's midsection. But pretty clear skies right here where I'm located in Indiana. But it's going to be interesting tomorrow morning to see what the U.S. Drought Monitor shows as it's released tomorrow. And I got some fresh sound I wanted to put on your show because I talked with USDA's meteorologist Brad Rippey. And he said we've seen some rather dry weather the last 30 days in parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, even southern Michigan. But that may start to change, especially when you look at some of the rain some areas in the Corn Belt received over the weekend. So here's a soundbite from Brad Rippey on rain. So if you want to go ahead and play it, Joe.
It does look like we're transitioning back into a somewhat wetter weather pattern over the next 10 days or more. And we should see pretty widespread Midwestern rainfall totals over the next 10 days on the order of 1 to 3 inches or more. And that should help to keep soils relatively soft and help to knock back some of this early flash drought that we're seeing just starting to evolve in some areas of the Midwest.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if the dry conditions stay on that map tomorrow morning after some areas in the Midwest receive those rains we talked about. But as far as temperatures, Riffy believes temperatures have returned to, quote, normal or even below normal. And it doesn't look like we are any type of extreme Midwestern heat for the rest of June into early July. So here's Brad Riffy on some of those temperatures, Joe, if you want to play it.
And that's really important because some of those earlier planted crops in the Western Corn Belt will be entering reproduction fairly soon. And we need to keep the heat down a little bit. And it does look like that Mother Nature is going to cooperate with temperatures no higher than the 80s to lower 90s for the next several days across the vast majority of the Midwest.
Chip, I hate to say it, though, but he did say that he's looking at some problem areas, and that would be the way Western Corn Belt, especially kind of that southeast South Dakota, that northwest Minnesota into northeast Iowa, or northwest Iowa, excuse me. Wow, I'm all over the place. Northwest Iowa, and so he's keeping an eye on that. You know the general area.
yeah. And we've got to look at the conditions that have been established in those areas to begin with. Betsy, those winds that blew for like a week straight out in those western areas with temperatures that were above normal and the wind blowing, it did some damage to the to the development of the corn crop, did some damage to the development of the bean crop, slowed things down a bit there, it looks like, and it just sucked all the moisture up out of the dirt. Now, if you do that, it takes more than one round of rains to change that situation. You start wishing for too much, and of course you start getting on the edge of some of the flooding that we're seeing in eastern Iowa with the heavy rains that we've seen. But for the most part, we've still got a situation in those areas that dried out that needs to be corrected.
And when you think about spraying, I had a farmer reach out to me in Minnesota just talking about spraying this year and how he wasn't able to spray for like 8-9 days in a row because of some of the weather that they had with some of those wind speeds. So it's interesting. It's interesting. But speaking of weather, let's talk about the Saharan dust storm. It's now lingering in the Caribbean. Reports say the thick brown dust can be seen in satellite images. And so the Weather Channel reporting it could reach parts of the Gulf Coast and even deep south, potentially later this week or into the weekend. 2020 for you.
they say that it's not all that unusual for this to happen, but it's like the first time in 50 years that it's made it this far. That makes it pretty unusual in my book.
Right. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not like it's just going to get into the Gulf and dissipate at that point. People inland in the Gulf states are going to be able to notice that dust from Africa has made its way into the United States. It just seems crazy to me.
Right. Well, here's something else in news out of Washington. The EPA announcing plans to stop the use of certain PFAS chemicals and products. PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. And I know we talked about this on the show, Chip, but last year, I think we talked about a herd of dairy cows in New Mexico tested positive for high concentrations of PFAS last year. Now, the EPA's final rule gives the agency the authority to review products containing PFAS before they can be manufactured, sold, or imported. It also means the EPA may prohibit companies from manufacturing, processing, or importing products containing certain types of PFAS chemicals, which linger in the environment and can cause adverse health effects without agency review or approval. Here's another update to U.S. Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue announcing Tuesday USDA's Farmers to Families Food Box program has distributed more than 20 million food boxes in support of American farmers and families affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. There's a little update.
Yeah, that is crazy. The amount of volume that has been put into that food box program. What an effective effort it sounds like it has been too. It has relieved much of the hunger concerns that people were facing as we went through this COVID situation. Really interesting. Thank you, Betsy. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
All right. That is Betsy Gibbon, national reporter for Ag Day, helping us out on AgriTalk this week. Davis is off. He's going to be back with us tomorrow and Friday. Okay, guys, get ready. Coming up next, we are going to put China and U.S. trade relations right on the center stage. We've got a conversation coming up with U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Robert Lighthizer coming up next here on AgriTalk.
Solving the soil health puzzle? La Crosse Seed has you covered. Get started today at lacrosseseed.com/partner or call 800-356-SEED.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Let's jump right into this. Robert Lighthizer is the chief of the U.S. Trade Representative Office. Ambassador Lighthizer, thank you so much for making time and for bringing your insights to the AgriTalk listeners.
Well, great. Thank you. Thank you, Chip, for having me. I'm excited to be on the show. I always enjoy talking to farmers. I told the president I was going to do your show when I talked to him yesterday, and he said to make sure that all your listeners out there know that he's sending his best and that we're working hard for him every day.
Good, 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 good. Very excellent. Let's start with something that has made headlines here recently, and I don't think that your comments are going to take too much time on this, but I know that listeners are very interested in your reaction to some of the market-sensitive comments made by Peter Navarro on Monday night when he said that the trade agreement with China is over. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I'd say, first of all, I think Peter was misunderstood. Trust me, the trade deal is on. It's the biggest trade deal. I know you want to jump in a little bit and talk about it. It's the biggest trade deal that anybody's ever done. It's completely on. Peter did not mean to give the impression he was, if you watch it, he was kind of talking over the person asking a question and really not answering the question it was asked. So it was just a complete misunderstanding. This is a huge deal. It's really, really good for farmers. You know, Chip, I should just take a step back and say, that the farmers and ranchers have a big, you know, really good team here with Secretary Sonny Perdue. I know you guys were talking about a minute ago. He's just terrific. And together we've all renegotiated the, 47% of America's trade volume and made it better between Canada, Mexico, Japan, China, and even Korea. So, we're working full time on this and we expect this deal to go forward and to really continue to contribute to major sales.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, if nothing else, the market reaction to Mr. Navarro's comments showed just how important this topic is to the U.S. and to global trade. So we need to keep that in mind as well.
I'll give you a tidbit on that if you like. Then I was talking to the president when he sent out his tweet saying that is wrong. So the president was you'll recall he when those stories came out, the president just it was in the evening. The president just quickly sent out a tweet saying that's just a misunderstanding. It's full speed ahead.
Right. Gotcha. Hey, Ambassador Lighthizer, can you even imagine a successful trade environment for the U.S. if China is not a trading partner? I mean, can the U.S. decouple from China in this?
Well, I don't want to speculate on that, on decoupling. The United States is going to do, what's in its interest overall, and there are a lot of challenges in our relationship with China. One thing's for sure, they are a huge potential and current agricultural market. We have, through this agreement, for the first time ever, opened up beef, poultry, we're selling massive amounts of soybeans again. I mean, if you go right down the line, dairy we have. I'll give you a statistic on here. In the 3 or 4 months this has been in effect, we have approved more than 2,000 new facilities to ship, or the Chinese have approved to ship to China. I mean, we're up to 3,500 now. So it's going to be massive impact on American farmers.
All right. Yeah. In the negotiations, Mr. Ambassador, does the dependency of the U.S. on China and the dependency of China on the U.S., does it make those negotiations more difficult at times? Because ultimately, both sides know that there's going to be trade on some level between the two countries, right?
Well, it's tricky. It's a tricky relationship, and as I say, it's very complicated. It's got a lot of sides to it that are important, really, to the future of America. And it's my view, and I think the president's view, that one of the most important things he's doing in office is getting that relationship right. I mean, these are the two biggest economies of the world. We're really in many ways a bipolar world, and that's the other polar. So the United States is, this is really important. The president's focused on it, but a huge part of it is the fact that, they've got 1.3 million people and they import about $140 billion worth of agriculture products every year. I mean, that's about as much as we export, as to the whole world. So, I mean, that's how big this is. And getting it right, and a lot of it is the purchase requirements, But an awful lot of the rest of it is these so-called structural changes, which I was referring to. That is to say, getting rid of SPS and other impediments right. to U.S. agricultural sales. And we have gotten rid of, they took 57 commitments and they've already followed through on 50 of them. So it's a massive change. It's really, really going to have a positive effect for farmers and ranchers in this country. And we're excited about it. But the relationship is still going to be complicated. It's going to continue to go on.
Sure.
I know that every farmer in America cares about the overall relationship as much as they do the ag relationship. So we have to get the balance right, and we have to make sure that the country is safe and prosperous and that our farmers are selling lots of products.
Right, right. Okay, Ambassador Lighthizer, it was reported a couple of weeks ago that Chinese state-owned importers were ordered to pause on imports of U.S. products. Did that happen?
No, that was one of these. I mean, the president always uses the term fake news. That was the fakiest of the fake news. I saw that. It created a big uproar. I mean, within 24 hours, they'd made a huge purchase of soybeans. So there was never a word to that. I went to the very high levels that I deal at, and because I was worried that there was, there was some truth to it, and I was assured there was absolutely no truth to it. So the Chinese have committed at the premier level, at the vice premier level, and in other communications at very high level in our government, that they expect to live up to the letter of this agreement. We certainly expect them to live up to it. So
right. So
I'm optimistic on that score.
Okay, on the accounting of the purchase agreements, when did the clock start to accumulate the total? Is it January D's accounting year, or is it in April, March, since China didn't announce its tariff exceptions or the TRQs until March of this year?
So that's complicated and just a great question, Chip. So picture us, we're negotiating through this thing. We negotiate into the new year. We finish on the 15th of January. We sign it. It's got a 30-day entry into a force date, so that means it's the 15th. The question is, do you go back and are the first-year commitments on a calendar year? The answer is they are on a calendar year, and that puts an awful lot of pressure on the Chinese, particularly in the purchasing side, to get that done in what is a relatively brief period of time.
Right.
So that was a specific point of negotiation. I think it's really important. The president thought it was really important for our farmers and ranchers that we get all that in during that calendar year. So we expect him to do it. Now, keep in mind,
yeah.
Well, you know this market about 10 times better than I do, but a lot of this is soybeans, right? It's the biggest single crop in here, and that's something that we're just starting to hit big right now. So
okay. By
nature, it's a little bit backloaded just because of the seasons and the markets, and you know all that a lot better than I do.
Right.
But
okay. But
we expect him to do it all during the course of this calendar year.
Okay, phase two of the negotiations right now, are they off the table?
No, I wouldn't say that. We've always taken the position that how phase two goes depends really on how phase one goes. So we have communications, but to actually start phase two, we're working right now very, very hard. Every day we're in communication with them. I talked about the 50 or the 57. I mean, these are specific things you've got to get through, beef. All these various products, there are actual regulations with everyone. We're doing the same thing in financial services. We're doing it in intellectual property. So there's an awful lot of work being done right now. And that a lot of that kind of work was slowed up somewhat by this horrible virus.
Right.
So we're working hard on phase one. We'll get to phase two at the appropriate time. But for now, phase one is the best trade deal we ever negotiated, and it's the only really written deal that China's ever done with the United States on any of these things. So it's a big deal.
Okay, is there a meeting with your Chinese counterpart on the schedule?
We have at this point, so here's how this works. There's daily communication. There are monthly meetings at a, you would think of it as like an office director level. There are quarterly meetings at the level of my deputy. And then I have a meeting a couple of times a year. It'll be a phone call meeting, and it'll be coming up here in the next few weeks. But that's good. Not the only communications. We have a lot of communications, and it's look. This is really a big deal, really a complicated agreement. I sometimes see these people who have never read the deal saying, "Oh, it's just about selling soybeans." I mean, this is a very long agreement with a lot of detail. I'd say If you look at the pages, half the pages deal with agriculture, not purchases, but getting ready, you know, clearing up all these impediments right. And SBS issues and all that.
Exactly. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for your time and for bringing your insights to AgriTalk. We really appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Chip. I really appreciate being on the show. This is a thrill for me. I'm an Ohio boy. I'm from an agricultural county, so this is a big deal for me.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you, sir.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. A little bit of strength in corn, Jeff. What's going on?
Well, hopefully some of the rumors that are going around about China buying some corn that Ambassador Lighthizer was talking about, at least in terms of their fulfilling their agreement, gave the market its early bounce. There's no confirmation of anything being done yet. They're also potentially shopping for Argentine or Ukraine corn, so we need to get some confirmation of that to keep the market going. We also got good news on the ethanol front. We had a 52,000 barrel per day increase in the production, and stocks fell again. Eighth straight week of increases, and it was a pretty good size increase this week as opposed to last week being just a minor increase.
Right, right. Yeah, and the fact that those stocks keep going down, it's proof that even though we're increasing, we're still using more than what we are producing. That is good news for that ethanol industry. Take us over to the livestock trade. What's going on there?
We're just falling back. We had a great day in the cattle yesterday, breaking out above resistance. We're consolidating. We have smaller freezer stocks of both beef and pork, partly related to the processing shutdowns. We just need to get confirmation of some better export news in tomorrow's report. We also have a big hogs and pigs report on Thursday afternoon, and that's got the trade just positioning. It's a pretty light trade. We're just waiting to see what those numbers show us.
Yeah, guys, if you didn't get a chance to hear yesterday afternoon's AgriTalk, go back and listen to that and get Jeff's comments on what to expect or what to look for in that quarterly hogs and pigs report. Pretty good information there. Jeff, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
You bet. Take care.
That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad that you could join us today. Glad that you could be with us for that conversation with Ambassador Robert Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Representative. Really good information there and some perspective on just how difficult his job is, I think, is kind of the bottom line there. Crazy to deal with the issues that he has to deal with on a daily basis. We've got the Farmer Forum ready to go. Just a reminder that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. It's a national partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture. To learn more about the movement and our partners, visit www.agweb.com/ACAM. All right, let's get this Farmer Forum started. I got to bring in Wayne Fredericks first. Wayne, how you doing? Welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thanks, Chip. Doing very well. We got a nice, sunny, calm day for once up here in Mitchell County. Haven't had many of them. Hopefully we can get dried off enough to get this post-emergent soybean spraying back rolling again. There's a lot of fields that still need to be sprayed, and weather's been kind of iffy getting that done.
Yeah, and it obviously needs to get done in a timely fashion. We're under the gun for for some legal reasons, but we're more under the gun to make sure that we don't let those weeds escape from us. There's no question about that. Wayne, at the start of the show, I said that you were going to be on, and I introduced you as Wayne Fredrickson. And I don't know why I did that. It's Fredericks all over my notes and everything. But you'll be glad to know that you've got friends in Northeast Iowa that are looking out for you, because I got two text messages that said, hey, it's Fredericks, not Fredrickson. Good stuff.
I'm guessing Pam Johnson just down the road might be one of them. She's only about 10, 12 miles from the crow flies from where we are. In fact, her brother's farm land that adjoins mine. So we're all, big friendly neighborhood up here.
Awesome. Hey, let's go over to Michigan and bring in Lori Isley. She joins us right now. How you doing, Lori?
I'm doing just fine, thanks.
Good. Lori is an ASA conservation champion. She's the president of the Michigan Soybean Promotion Committee. Congratulations on the conservation champion. I was looking at some of the background on your farm up there, Lori. You have been committed to a conservation effort for a long time up in Michigan. Why?
For a couple different reasons. We're a fifth generation farm, so we're certainly grateful that the generations before us practiced conservation so that we were able to work this land that we have the privilege of working. We've just felt for a really long time that it's important to conserve this land that we've been given, and certainly because we are in the Lake Erie Water Basin, there's been a lot of efforts to try and reduce the amount of phosphorus that's going into Lake Erie because of some of the issues they've had in the past with algal blooms from an excessive amount of phosphorus. So we've been able to implement some practices in many different areas and be able to use those to reduce our impact on that watershed.
Yeah, you've even testified on this in Lansing, haven't you?
I've had the opportunity a couple of different times to talk to both the House and the Senate Ag Committees about some of the practices that we employ here in southeastern Michigan.
So what is the message that you give them? What kind of a reception does it get? Is it one that's of skeptic, or are they appreciative of the efforts that are already being made?
The majority of the time we get appreciation for what's happening. We also often get the question, how do we get more farmers to do this? And that's been a continuing issue, and we've made some steps in that. We're always open to have people visit the farm. We've been able to host some gatherings here called Shop Talks, which we hold just out in our shop, and we've been able to bring many farmers together there and sometimes representatives from some of the local agencies and be able to talk to them about strip tillage in particular. We've done quite a bit of that, and along with cover crops, filter strips, any of the different practices. And what we like to emphasize with the farmers that we meet with is that conservation not only is a really good idea for the future and for our farms themselves, but it's also still a very profitable enterprise. And so we really want to focus on that, because most farmers are looking at a pretty slim bottom line there. So we want to make sure that they understand that implementing conservation does not mean limiting your profitability.
Right. Yeah, I want to talk more about that and the profitability side of things here in just a bit. Wayne, it's National Pollinators Week. It's got to be a good week for you, right?
Well, you bet. They're very important for agriculture. They're a very important measurement of our environment, and actions of agriculture in relation to pollinators is really important. Although soybeans, which, I'm the director in the Soybean Association, are a self-pollinating plant, we have seen some research indicating that the presence of pollinators in and around bean fields can potentially have a significant impact on raising yields. And so I know there's some research at Iowa State University on these, infield strips, that if you get some good, pollinator habitat planted there, that, we can draw in more pollinators and potentially improve yields.
Right.
It's just a good time of year, and it's a good time to be celebrating National Pollinator Week.
Right. Wayne, when you think about a pollinator plot, you know, I think about the CRP pollinator program, and some of those fields are, heck, they're half a section that are enrolled in the pollinator program under the CRP. We don't necessarily have to think on that scale, do we?
No, we don't. And in our particular operation, you know, we first, you know, became aware of the opportunities in 2014. I saw a presentation that, done by Agsol where it was on that profit zone manager, where as you take a, you know, 3 or 5 years worth of yield data, you input your cost and your returns, and you do a profitability map. Mm-hmm. And we found that we had nooks and crannies on several pieces of ground that were very seldom profitable. And that was during a time period when crop prices are a lot better than today.
Yep.
And so that also coincided with the Obama's administration of all hands on deck to address the monarch situation.
Yep.
Because we had saw a dramatic decline in our population of monarchs, and the Fish and Wildlife Service had, you know, been issued a suit to move forward on a listing decision.
Right.
And so we're kind of in the middle of that process right now.
Right.
But anyway, that coincided with the opportunity to put some of these areas into CRP. And as yep. Lori mentioned, you can employ conservation on the farm. We put in 5 different pieces of habitat at that time, just totaling slightly under 7 acres. That's
yeah.
not a lot, but they were strategically
right.
placed in areas
yes.
that, you know, not only benefited pollinators, they improved farm profitability because they were
yep.
on spots that weren't necessarily that profitable. But we had several of them that also boosted water quality efforts. We expanded buffer strips
Excellent.
Around a sinkhole or along a waterway, and we utilized, you know, pollinator habitat in those buffer
yep.
strips. And we didn't just put in grass. We put in forest
right.
so that,
right.
you know, we could benefit pollinators as well. So, you know, I've enjoyed that effort. It has been a profitable one on the farm, and it's kind
cool.
of funny when people come to visit. You know, it used to be you'd always take them out and show them the crops. Now you take them out and show them your habitat. It's just
interesting.
It's a totally different concept. You never imagined yeah. would have happened.
That's right. That's right. And it's all about that economic. You know, that what Wayne is talking about is precision conservation, Lori. It's a concept that's catching on in Wayne's area. I know that for a fact. Is it catching on in Michigan?
Certainly. There is more and more of an effort to implement, use the technology that's available in order to collect the data. Certainly, it all starts with a regular program of soil testing. We test half our acres every other year so that we know what our nutrient needs are going to be, and then we use that data when we're putting together prescriptions for our planter and for our fertilizer application, because it's one, it's a cost savings in that area as well. It's silly to fertilize
yep.
something that it doesn't need it. And
yep.
it's also an opportunity for us to best meet the needs of our soil as well as protecting our water resources.
Yep. Yep. I tell you what, this is a concept that I am 100% behind it, because as you both commented on it, adds to the bottom line when you take those least productive acres out of production. The other thing that it does is over time, it's going to build your APH, isn't it, Wayne?
Yes, it does.
Yep.
Yes, it does.
Yep.
And it's,
so,
that's beneficial as well.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of advantages and benefits of taking a closer look at what Lori and Wayne are talking about with this precision conservation. Of course, it takes data. You got to have the data rolling in order to take
mm-hmm.
advantage of it, but it is there. Okay, guys, when we come back, let's switch gears just a little bit, because I do want to get your opinion on some of the headlines that are out there. Let's talk a little bit of trade. You guys are both involved with the ASA. I want to talk some trade issues with Lori Isley and Wayne Fredericks on the Farmer Forum on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. Late last night, one was full
of fishing gear, the other Miller Lite. All right, welcome back to the Farmer Forum on AgriTalk, sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. We are having a conversation today with Lori Isley from Michigan, Wayne Fredericks from Northeast Iowa. Lori, in the last segment, you were talking about these farmer-to-farmer meetings. Number one, are those difficult meetings to have? Because I know sometimes when you're standing up in front of your peers talking about what you're doing on your farm, it can be sometimes turn into an awkward situation. Does that happen in these kind of meetings?
It can sometimes be intimidating because, of course, yeah. These are the people that drive by your fields and that you talk to at the elevator and so on. But it's not a required meeting, so we trust that most of the farmers that attend the meeting hopefully are coming for more than just the free meal, and that they're also a little bit interested in hearing some of the opportunities that are available. The other thing that works in our favor is because we're in this Lake Erie Basin, there's been a fair amount of federal money put into the area for implementation. So sometimes not only can we share these practices with a farmer, we can help them pay for them. Not us personally, but we can lead them to a source of revenue that will help them pay. Yes, for some cost sharing for things like cover crops and filter strips and things like that. So oftentimes that's a bit of a draw to get them to come. But overall, we've had really good participation in the different shop talks that we've had, and oftentimes follow-up conversations with people that will just come by and say, can we ride along and see how the strip till works, which is really beneficial. In fact, a neighbor just down the road from us just purchased a strip till for the very first time. So it's exciting when you see that momentum begin to pick up, however slowly that might be. It's exciting to do that.
Yeah. Lori, do you get an opportunity to do that with any non-farmers, show them what you're doing on the farm to improve water quality?
We try and take advantage of any opportunity that comes along. We are we participate in the MEAT program, which is a Michigan program, which stands for Michigan Environmental Agricultural Assurance Program. It's a verification process, and perhaps you've heard of it before, but you go through it with a non-farm one, and there's signage we put in our yard that indicates that we have that verification for cropping systems and fed. We also have signage that we put in the field where we have filter strips or where we're using strip tilling, so farmers and non-farmers, so the public can see that and good say, I wonder what that is. And we, whenever there's an opportunity to have a newspaper or radio coverage, we try and jump at that opportunity as well to get the message out.
Good for you. Good for you. Hey, Wayne, if you would, talk about the 2021 ASA Conservation Legacy Awards.
Well, we give these out every year. There are four regional awards in the United States. And, of course, you know, there's about 30 states there in the middle of the country that are primarily raised soybeans. But they are awarded at the Commodity Classic in San Antonio, Texas. That's where we pick the national winner. But we select four regional winners. Farmers can apply for these. Applications are due by September 1st of 2020, and they can go to www.soygrowers.com or just Google American Soybean Association and go to their website for that application. But they'll come out, they'll do videos of those farms. They're going to highlight those videos at our awards banquet in San Antonio. It is a wonderful evening. It is a wonderful event. And so it's we encourage people that are really doing some nice things on their farm and with conservation to consider applying for that Conservation Legacy Award.
Right. And Wayne, it's a good way to have somebody help you tell your story of what you're doing on your farm. And that is part of getting over the hump of being an advocate for these conservation measures, right?
It is. You know, I've been going to Commodity Classic for about 10 years. And these awards keep rising in caliber every year. And boy, oh boy, what people are doing out there on their farms relative to conservation is amazing.
Pretty
and
amazing
it's just that we'd like to see more adoption of those practices across a broader range of environments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lori, we've only got about a minute and a half left here, but I want to ask you the trade issues that we were talking about with Ambassador Lighthizer, trade tensions with China. Boy, we've got to be successful in trade with China to be successful in soybean production here, right?
That is correct. Certainly China was an extremely large market for us, and we are very much in favor of efforts that are being made to restore that market. We're excited that ASA, beyond just looking at restoring that market, also through USEC and WISH, yeah, are also looking at growing and developing new markets in Africa and Asia and Latin America. And that certainly is a step. I think we've learned a little bit from China not to put all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak. And so looking at the development through WISH and USEC to develop new markets is also important. But certainly we'd like a share, if not all of that China market back.
Right. Boy, Wayne, the point that Lori makes there about building other markets out there, that is so critical at this time.
It is. I've been to Bangladesh and India myself. Man, there's potential there someday. We need to cultivate that market. ASA, USEC, United Soybean Board are there. We're working it hard for the benefit of America's soybean growers.
Excellent. Excellent. Wayne, thank you so much for making time for us today. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, Lori, same to you. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that's Lori Isley from Michigan, Wayne Fredericks from Northeast Iowa. In addition to thanking Lori and thanking Wayne, we want to put out a big thank you to Ambassador Robert Lighthizer from the U.S. Trade Representative Office for joining us today, making his views known to the AgriTalk listeners. Really appreciate that effort. And thank you for listening. You got to come back this afternoon. Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions will be our guest this afternoon. And tomorrow morning, this will be fun, Congressman Mike Conaway from Texas.
That's right.